Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Daily Medieval Podcast. And today we are zooming in on a particularly interesting saint today, one in which is very local to where I am, and that is Saint William of Norwich. A fascinating saint who has a very troubled history, really. So we're venturing into kind of 1132 to 1144, kind of the 12th century, England, particularly Norwich, to dive into kind of the controversy around St. William and kind of this repeated pursuit to capitalize on a saint. So born in 1132, the life and miracles of St. William was written to us, comes from us, from Thomas of Monmouth, a monk at Norwich Benedictine Monastery. He wrote it at about 1149, 1150, a few years before, just as the kind of the cult of St. William was about to take off. Essentially, William was a young boy, a young English boy, whose disappearance and killing, his murder, was attributed to the Jewish community at Norwich. It's one of the kind of earliest examples, I guess, in England of kind of anti-Semitism. And it's kind of the first known accusation against Jews with a ritual of murder. So he was an apprentice tanner who regularly came into contact with Jews and visited their homes as part of his trade. Now, essentially, one day at Mousehold Heath, which is kind of a wooded area just east of Norwich, he was found dead in the forest, and rumours quickly spread that the local Jewish community had stolen the boy and done what's known as a blood libel. So essentially, a blood libel is when a young person is captured by a kind of a Jewish community, and then the blood of a Christian child is then drank, used for human So essentially, a blood libel, which falsely accuses Jews of murdering Christian boys in order to use their blood for religious rituals, is basically a human sacrifice ritual whereby they poison the host, they then undertake a whole ritual and sacrifice the Christian martyr. Now, there's three of these in England. You have William of Norwich, Little St. Hugh of Lincoln, and Simon of Trent, who became symbols of local cults of venerations because of these blood libels. Now, it should be said that blood libels never existed. It was just anti-Semitic hate against the Jewish community. But the thing is that it then became a symbol, such as, well, William, for instance, of a martyr. And many martyrs do become saints. Now, although William was never officially canonized, a cult of veneration quickly grew in the 1150s surrounding his death. So we see, for instance, one of the best things from Thomas of Monmouth's Vita about St. William is that we're able to track, using the miracles, the growth of the cult over time. It's one of the really greatest aspects of the miracle collections, of with how detailed they are. So we can see that essentially a few years after the cult became around, so we have, he dies in 1144, age 12. By 1150, the Vita of St. William is written, the cult is beginning to grow, and we see by 1151 that 57% of pilgrims lived within 10 miles of Norwich. So that's pretty much just the city of Norwich, with a few of the outskirts around it. So by 1154, this then rises to 23 miles. Then from 1154 to 1172, this increases to 45 miles, essentially encapsulating the whole of East Anglia. Now, it's interesting, what's most interesting is that basically 45 miles is the limit. And what's really particularly interesting about that is two things. One is once you get above that 45 miles, the number of pilgrims drastically drop. The second is that essentially once the cult of influence starts to encroach upon the cult of influence of Bury St. Edmunds, the cult drastically decreases in popularity. St. Edmund was a far more popular saint, a far more legitimate saint, and a far older saint. And so, although within Norwich there was a cult following, once you start to get towards Bury St. Edmunds, the spheres of influence start to shift. But what we see is that what's quite odd about St. William is that he was translated four times. He was translated from Thorpe Wood, so in Mousehole Heath you can still find the remains of the church that was built above where the body was found of William. So he was moved from there to the Monk Cemetery. He was then moved from the Monk Cemetery to the Chapter House, and then from the Chapter House to the south side of the High Altar. So why may this have been? Well, there's a few different arguments. So one of which is that, okay, well, saints are sometimes translated when there are building projects. When, you know, you build a new section of the church, you then move the saint to and from it. But, and this is where kind of the controversies begin, or, well, further extend, is that each translation has its own ceremony, and each ceremony sees a massive influx of pilgrims. So by being translated four times, we can see that there's a repeated attempt to kind of really kickstart this cult, because it never really truly gains a lot of popularity. Obviously, as we say, within East Anglia it does, but not on the scales of some other saints, such as, you know, like we say, St. Edmund, or, you know, St. Swithin or Dunstan, you know, all these other ones. So essentially, like we say, it's a repeated pursuit to capitalize on a saint. And we see essentially a very strange thing occur in the miracles, where there is a repeated attempt and an insistence for pilgrims to donate wax and candles. So here are two miracle stories that I'm going to kind of talk to you about. The first is Hildebrand, a man struck with a severe sickness. So he was advised by his friends, when he was struck by the sickness, to take a candle to St. William. He does so, he gets the wax, he gets the candle, takes it to St. William, and donates it. As soon as he donates it, he begins to instantly feel better. Now, according to testimony from his friends and himself, the instant that the candle was brought to that martyr, the anguish of his disease abated. Now, it's a weird insistence about kind of donating a candle, especially when we get on to the second miracle. A woman struck with cancer twice. So a woman gets cancer. She is advised to donate wax to the martyr. She does so, and she swears an oath that she will continue to do so to ensure that she heals and gets better. However, this does not happen. She forgets, she does not continue to donate the wax, she refuses to, and the cancer comes back. And so she then, according to her oath, goes back and donates the candle once again, and she is cured. Now, this is an odd story, because it shows that with St. William, the woman, that there's a condition to which you're healed, which you don't necessarily see with other saints. With other saints, I mean, you know, we see it with Hildebrand. He gives the wax, he's then cured, he's on his way home. Whereas with this, there is almost a condition with St. William that you will only be healed if you maintain your oath of donating wax. Now, why the insistence of wax? Well, wax was incredibly expensive, especially in cathedrals. We see it across the board in many different cathedrals. Canterbury spends massive amounts of wax, you know, and we see that at Norwich as well, the sacrist of Norwich. So the sacrist was in charge of the shrines. We see him spending £30 of his £50 allocated funds on wax alone. Now, this is a huge cost. So, what do? Well, you write in the miracles that your pilgrim followers should donate wax, therefore cutting down the cost. We have seen it at Bury St. Edmunds, we've seen it at Canterbury, we've seen it at many other places, records showing that the wax donated was then remelted and either used to make candles to light the cathedral, or, which is rather cheeky, to remake new candles that was then sold to pilgrims to then donate back to the shrine. So it's kind of this whole like circle of kind of wax, really. And so we see an insistence at Norwich to donate wax from William. Now, the thing is about William is that people eventually saw through the lies of the blood libel. Now, not many people believed in it, but it was taken to court. It was also it's also typical during this time for canonization to occur that there is a papal investigation, and it was seen that basically it was a load of rubbish, that William was killed through some, you know, unsolved murder, but it was not the Jewish community, therefore he was not a martyr, and it was not through a blood libel. So although there were attempts to ignite the cult over time, as we see between kind of 1140 and 1172, essentially after this it begins to die out, and basically William begins to cease, and the sphere of influence of St. Edmund begins to grow into East Anglia. So there we have it. There is the kind of controversial life and miracles of St. William, come to us from Thomas of Monmouth and myself. So there we have it. Thank you ever so much for watching. If you enjoy the video and you'd like to know about the life and miracles of other saints, then I'm more than happy to do so, and I'm very excited to do so. Like I say, this is my kind of area of expertise, so talking about saints is very interesting. And actually, when you go to Norwich Cathedral, I've searched many, many times, and I cannot for the life of me find any kind of reference to St. William, apart from, obviously, the remains of the church that are at Mousehold Heath. So if anyone does know of any, you know, wherever St. William may be, then do let me know. But other than that, see you next time. Thank you very much.